Well, it's Monday again, and you know what that means. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute of Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Nice early morning, and it's a beautiful day out, and I hate being in the basement studio on days like this, but hey, here we are.
That's fine, but like I said, it's Monday, and so everybody who's listened to our program for any length of time knows what that means. As a matter of fact, Chuck, you and I were talking offline that we ought to dedicate Mondays now just to this one topic, because it's something that keeps coming up and coming up and coming up and coming up every Monday, because it seems as if every Friday, Charles, and it's been just about every Friday, that as far as I can back as I can remember, is that we get a new interesting, shall we say, pronouncement from the office of the White House. A new executive order signed by President Barack Obama, creating more bureaucracy, taking away more of our personal liberties, and potentially putting us in a very dangerous position to be a citizen in this country who doesn't agree with our current administration. Yes, folks, it's Monday, and yes, you do know what that means. Another new executive order has been rolled out from the White House. Now, this one, Charles, is an interesting one because in light of what happened in the Midwest last week with the storm that moved through, which knocked out power to over 3 million people, over a million of those in Ohio alone, I think this is an interesting time where an administration uses a crisis in order to expand their power. That's best I can get a read out of this, because this executive order, which is titled The Assignment of National Security and Emergency Preparedness Communications Functions. If you were just quickly glancing at it, I guess, Charles, this would kind of look like, oh, okay, well, they're just making sure that they can talk to each other in case of an emergency. But you've done a little bit of reading into this, Charles, and what's your take on it?
Well, it looks to me, and I'll be quite honest, Barry, this is one of the most nebulously written executive orders I've ever seen. I really think it basically gives them the power to do almost anything with communication, but I think the purpose is to make sure that they can talk in case of a national emergency, that the federal government agencies can talk to each other, but we're not allowed to talk to each other. In other words, the people are not permitted use of the airwaves or any kind of communications capability, things like social sites, internet, you name it, radio communications for civilian use will all be basically shuffled over to complete federal control. And the purpose should be obvious to anybody who pays attention to how things work. Anyone who would use this kind of a thing during an emergency situation, and an emergency could be anything. For instance, in Katrina, people that were coordinating the idea that there was some resistance to FEMA during Katrina because FEMA came in and tried to act like the 800-pound gorilla on the block and basically got it handed back to them, both by the state and local authorities, who basically said, you're not coming in here and running roughshod over us. In that kind of a case, the federal government could come in and shut down all communications capabilities of anyone but FEMA and stop any coordination of those efforts. And that's what it looks like to me.
Well, it does look like that. And one of the first reads that I got on this was in the very first section, Charles, that under the policy section, it says that the federal government must have the ability to communicate at all times and under all circumstances to carry out its most critical and time-sensitive mission. So basically what they're saying is anytime, anywhere, anyhow, the federal government reigns supreme in communications. Now it goes on to say survivable, resilient, enduring, and effective communications, both domestic and international, are essential to enable the executive branch to communicate within itself and with the other two branches of government, the states and the locals, private sector entities, and the public, allies, and other nations. Such communications must be possible under all circumstances to ensure national security. Now, Chuck, I think this is an interesting broad sweep of the idea of national security. Most people, when they think of national security, think defending our borders, making sure that we don't have spies in the federal government stealing our codes to our nuclear missiles, and those type of things. Not so much we've got to have access all the time, 24/7, to every communication engine that exists in the country. I think that's very, very from a perspective of those who are concerned about, number one, their privacy, and number two, their liberties. Honestly, Charles, this kind of looks like a backdoor way of getting at internet control.
Yeah. Look, let's be quite honest. First of all, this is a seizure of congressional authority.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost.
And that seems to be the modus operandi of this particular president. His modus operandi is simply seize the authority. He can't get Congress to pass it for him. He simply just goes out and takes it. Where we've got a real problem, Barry, is think about this in terms of a spoiled child. Spoiled child says, I want this, I want this, I want this. And when it's not given to him, he goes out and takes it. And an irresponsible parent does nothing. And in this case, Congress is the irresponsible parent. Basically, Congress is doing nothing. The House of Representatives should honestly be holding hearings on all this stuff right now for purposes of gathering information for impeachment. Because what's happening is that the President of the United States is wantonly violating the Constitution. He knows he's violating it, and he knows he can get away with it because he has taken on a Democratic rather than a Republican view of the law. And anybody who's listened to this show should know the difference. A Democratic view of the law is the idea that I have the people behind me and therefore I can do anything I want. A Republican idea of the law is, and remember, these are small d and small r, not big D and big R. We're not talking about party politics here. The Republican idea is that there is a law and I have to follow it. And the law of the land is the United States Constitution. And the President of the United States has taken a Democratic approach, and he is saying, I have the people behind me, he thinks, and therefore I can do anything I want as President of the United States. Now, this has been creeping into presidential relations with Congress, oh gosh, for the last, well, over 100 years. The executive branch seizing more and more and more power. I think you'll find that one of the main proponents of this was someone who, for some reason, Republicans find admirable. I still can't figure out why, and that is, when I say Republicans, I mean big R Republicans.
Yeah.
That's Teddy Roosevelt, who was a master of simply seizing control of things. He would simply write out an executive order. Now, he's not the biggest user of one. I'd love to know what the number of executive orders issued by this particular president is. It has to be way up there, because even if it's a small number, he's doing major power seizures with these things. And this is one of them.
Well, you're right, Chuck. And honestly, I've dug down into this a little bit. You're right. It's nebulous. But there's just enough that you can kind of start seeing what the real framework is. And ladies and gentlemen, if you go online to whitehouse.gov, to the press office, and look at the executive order for July the 6th, and again, it doesn't have a number yet, but it is the Assignment of National Security and Emergency Preparedness Communications Functions, or what they call NSEP. But if you go down to Section 5 of this beauty, Charles, there's two sections in here immediately that jump out. 5.1, which gives, and this assigns specific responsibilities to certain agencies. Now, I thought it was interesting because of the language used. In 5.1, it's the Secretary of Defense, who's part of this joint working group in relation to the NSEP. Basically, the Secretary of Defense oversees the development, testing, implementation, and sustainment of these communications directly responsive to the national security needs of the president, the vice president. Funny, how many national security issues do you think the vice president's taking care of, Charles?
Well, I don't think Crazy Joe should be in charge of any
of it. That's right.
Yeah.
But the point is, think about this. It's not the national security needs of the country now. It's the national security needs of the president. So whatever the president decides, and if you think back to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that's when this thing starts making sense. So SecDef is going to be developing, testing, implementing, and sustaining communication networks so that the president can do what he wants to do, the vice president, senior national leadership, including communications with or among the president, vice president, White House staff, not cabinet secretaries, Charles, the White House staff.
Right, right.
Okay? And it keeps going, nuclear command and control leadership is important. Continuity of government communications. That's another thing. We've talked about continuity of government issues here before. The big deal is at the very end of that paragraph, Charles, communications among the executive, judicial, and legislative branches to support, and folks, this is all in capital letters, enduring constitutional government. Charles, why is that capitalized? That's something we're going to have to dig into. What do they mean by enduring constitutional government? First and foremost, Charles, I don't think either you or I or most of our listeners out there believe that Barack Obama believes in constitutional government, as this executive order belies, this power grab from the Congress. But we now have a new phrase thrown into the mix, and I'm going to try to do some research while we have downtime between our programs and figure out what this phrase, during constitutional government, which each word's capitalized, Charles, actually means, because I don't see it in this document in other places.
To be quite honest, this sounds like Lincoln-esque language.
Well, it very much does. Well, it sounds
in order to save the Constitutional Republic, we have to destroy the Constitution.
We have to destroy the Constitution. That's right. Well, think about it this way, Charles, because the next section, 5.2, ladies and gentlemen, allows the Secretary of Homeland Security. So here we've got Homeland Security in the mix. And they're going to oversee the development, testing, implementation, and sustainment of these NSEP communications that support continuity of government. That's their first job. Emergency preparedness response communications come second. Non-military executive branch communication systems, critical infrastructure protection networks, and here's the kick, Chuck, non-military communications networks. What is a non-military communication network, Charles?
Well, that's any network that's not under the direct control of the United States military. In other words, amateur radio networks, private radio stations, news networks.
Yes, television stations, the internet. Yes. It's all of those things, ladies and gentlemen, particularly with respect to prioritization and restoration. Huh. So Homeland Security Secretary is going to be going, especially with these non-military communication networks, is going to be telling them which ones take priority. And if we have a situation where they go down, which ones get restored when? Now, Charles, if I were a guessing man, and I sometimes guess, if we had a situation where Fox News and CNN both went down, which one do you think this administration's Homeland Security Department would prioritize for restoration first?
Oh, the Communist News Network.
Oh, exactly. Because the ones that are speaking out critically against the administration, not so much. I would say on your radio stations, those who are carrying, say, the Rush Limbaughs, Sean Hannity's and Glenn Beck's of the world, probably wouldn't come on as fast as those who are carrying National Pravda Radio.
I'm going to be quite honest with you. I don't think any of them are going to come on at all, except the ones, for instance, remember the old CD networks and in your
civilian
in the old days when you had only an AM radio in your car and you had those little triangles and you were supposed to go there in case of some kind of horrific emergency like a nuclear war or something. You were supposed to go to those marks on your dial. And they had a network set up of stations whose job it was on those two frequencies to broadcast nothing but what amounted to government bulletins. Everybody else would be off the air. And the way it worked was they had a network of stations that would go up and down in certain regional areas, and they would only be on for a few seconds at a time. So you would hear the same message being broadcast, but they would fade out as the stations got further and further and further away. It was back in the old days when you used to home in on radio stations as a tracking device for missiles.
Right.
Well, nobody does that anymore. It's all GPS control now and all that stuff. But it doesn't matter. That power was taken way back when, and now this looks like a reinforcement of that power. And basically, nobody except a station that would guarantee that they would broadcast the propaganda, that whatever propaganda the government wanted to put out would be able to allow back on the air. So you're right. Those stations that show a proclivity for the kind of programming that they run might not get their thing back unless they agreed that, well, you're no longer going to run these programs. You're only going to run the programs that we give you to run.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to keep themselves commercially viable, you know what's going to happen. Those stations will do whatever they're told.
Well, that's right. And the ones that crow about it, Charles, and the ones that are upset about it, well, Barack Obama's taking care of that little problem, too, because at the very end in Section 7, Section 7F, under general provisions, it says this order is not intended to and does not create any right or benefit, substantive or procedural, enforceable at law or in equity by any party against the United States, its departments, agencies, or entities, its officers, employees, or agents, or any other person. In other words, no matter what we do, you can't sue us for it.
Yeah, and basically what this says is there is no such thing as a right to run a radio station.
Right, that's it.
Or a TV station or an internet outlet.
That's right.
Okay, with that, I'm afraid we're out of time for today.
So in other words, our president has once again had a shocking expanse of federal authority that he does on Friday afternoon in the guise of an executive order. Ladies and gentlemen, that's this administration's MO, and for every Friday that he does it, we're going to be telling you on Monday why you should be calling your congressman and telling them to grow a backbone and stand up against these sweeping grabs of power by the administration. And if you don't know how to get in contact with your congressman, go to our website at principledpolicy.com and look it up. We have the list there.
That's right. Be with us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.